You're all very welcome to Ireland's biggest summer school, a key central component of Féilean football and really what makes Féile stand out from any other similar festival, community festival across Europe and indeed beyond. So Fáilte romhaibh, a Ligue Nua. The debates and discussion committee that put together Ireland's largest summer school are absolutely delighted of terms of how things have went over the last few days, from the Orange Order and Republicans coming together and sharing a stage publicly last Friday with over 240 people. We've certainly noticed a huge lift in the last number of days in our debates and discussions compared to recent years, and that's down to the huge talented, capable people that we've been able to engage with and bring along. From the Orange Order to Syriza to Jeremy Corbyn, and tonight we'll have Chief Constable George Hamilton and Deputy First Minister Martin McGuinness share a stage, as well as John Connors, the infamous, famous love-hate star. So there's a whole host of modern progressive debates and discussions that we've been able to pull together, and none more so relevant than the question that this debate poses today. So on the panel today, who we have is Joe Austin, veteran Republican. Joe, hope you don't mind me saying that, from Sinn Féin. Gemma Weir, potentially the next councillor in North Belfast. You heard it here first. And Kieran Allen's made the trip, representing the People Before Profit from Dublin. So you're all very welcome, and all of you are very welcome also. In terms of the format of today's discussion, we'll have a 5-10 minute contribution from each member of the panel, and really, like all Féile debates and discussions, it's about the audience, it's about you here. There's plenty of ideas here. I think it's also worth noting that this is the first time from a, and this is what Féile does best, breaks new ground. This is the first time that we've had these progressive organisations come together and share a stage. In these times, on these islands, when working people are facing an absolute onslaught from right-wing policies, both in Ireland and across Britain, and these organisations in their own right and in their own way are standing up to that. So for the first time ever, looking at it from a Belfast perspective and obviously beyond that, they're going to share a platform and share with us today their ideas and their sense in terms of how we take things forward. Belfast is a city with an absolute proud left-wing tradition, and it's these folks and the organisations they represent that has maintained that tradition throughout many, many years. So that's enough from me, you'll be glad to hear. It's also my job to make sure that things run smoothly, so you are all warned, so on your best behaviour. So we're going to kick off with Gemma Weir from the Workers' Party, that will share her thoughts, and then we'll take each panel member, and then we'll throw it open. Fair enough, folks? So, over to yourself.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Thanks very much for having me today. The title today is Austerity, Is There a Left-Wing Alternative? Of course, there's an alternative to austerity. Austerity is not a natural phenomenon over which we have no control. Austerity is a political project, and it's not a level playing field. The austerity project is always accompanied with statements like, we're all in this together. We all must tighten our belts. We need to cut the public spending to help regrow our economy. But of course, that we that they're talking about is actually working people, working families, people without jobs, single parents, students, people with disabilities, the sick and the old. These are the people that the austerity agenda sets out to punish. Of course, there is an alternative to austerity, because there has to be an alternative. And only the left can provide that. The left alternative to austerity is not some sort of pipe dream. It's not some crazy wish list for a better life or the product of idealistic dreamers. The left alternative is viable, realistic and focused. It's based firmly on a socialist programme of public investment and ownership of the economy. Only a party that puts forward that kind of socialist programme can say it's against austerity. Austerity has been presented as the solution, and as the only solution to the current crisis. It's championed by the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the European Union. That has been echoed by Westminster and, of course, our very own Assembly at Stormont. The Stormont Assembly Executive and Sinn Féin are represented here today. They do austerity all on its own, without any pressure from the Tories at Westminster or from the EU. Our local version of austerity agenda is the Stormont House Agreement. Now, let's leave welfare aside for just a moment. The Stormont House Agreement slashes 20,000 public sector jobs, and it has borrowed $750 million to fund those redundancies. The Stormont House Agreement will sell off profitable state assets like Belfast Harbour Estate and Translink. It will sell off valuable public buildings and properties to private developers. It will slash spending in education and health, and it will prioritise the private sector over the public sector. The Stormont House Agreement has been condemned by the trade unions as bad for workers. But its central plank and the only economic strategy the Stormont executive have is to lower corporation tax. Again, a policy of tax breaks for the rich at the expense of the poor. Plans to lower corporation tax are deeply flawed. The differential between the UK and Northern Ireland is narrowing anyway, meaning soon there will be no great difference between the UK rate and the one in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland can never compete with the negligible rates paid in the Republic of Ireland by the likes of Apple, Google and Amazon. And anyway, Republic of Ireland tax rates facilitate international tax avoidance. In any event, there is more evidence that an educated and skilled workforce is a bigger attraction for foreign direct investment than tax rates. Last month, Almac, a local successful pharmaceutical company, warned it may not be able to fill 300 local jobs because of lack of qualified people here. This at a time when Stormont, not the Tories, are slashing funding to local universities. That's what austerity means to Northern Ireland, an all-out attack on public spending, public projects and public assets. It means cuts to health, education, skills, training and house building. It means borrowing huge sums of money, of which, of course, will be paid back with interest, to fund the redundancies of over 20,000 public sector workers. And it means reducing corporation tax for the big businesses without one guaranteed job in return. That is the Stormont House Agreement. That is the homegrown austerity agenda. Of course, there is a left alternative to the savage assault on ordinary people, public services and on the prospects and opportunity for our young people. We can and we must build a better society in Northern Ireland, but not at the expense of the people who had no part in the economic collapse. The capitalist economy system that has inbuilt itself, self-destruct button, it is always destined to end in collapse. And the response of capital, big banks, businesses, those who support and facilitate them, is to walk away from their own mess and charge everybody else for cleaning it up. The left response to the crisis is a socialist programme of public investment and ownership of the economy. We should take the $750 million earmarked by the Assembly to make thousands of people redundant and instead use it to build 20,000 badly needed public authority houses. We should examine the cost of segregated society in Northern Ireland and take immediate measures to dismantle it. Studies show this alone could save £3 billion. We must end the privatisation of public services and the sales of profitable public assets. We must stop plans to lower corporation tax and provide the banks with even bigger breaks. It will cost between $350 to $500 million to lower the rate of corporation tax. If we scrap that bright idea, there'd be no need for any of the welfare cuts at all. The parties in the Stormont executive have all set out their stall on austerity. There may be disagreements about how it should be implemented, but they are all agreed on the principle that the rich get richer and the rest of us pick up the bill. They are all agreed on cuts to public services, to community groups, the arts, to your schools and education. They're all agreed on that. That's why they signed up to the Stormont House Agreement, our local austerity charter. Not only is there a left alternative, but it's time that it took centre stage. Thank you.
Okay, Gemma, thank you. Certainly food for thought and all of that. So we're going to now have Joe Austin from Sinn Féin.
You're all welcome here today. Can you hear me okay? Yeah. I came here on the basis that us as of the left would have a view and an overall view of the battle against austerity. I also came to resist the temptation that the left fall into or are pushed into or run into to blame each other on what in fact is a capitalist conspiracy. So I want to just approach it from a slightly different angle than the last speaker. And no doubt the bones of the issue we'll get into during the discussion. I'm assuming that the definition of the left, and there are many definitions, and they grow by the day, if not by the week. We have the far left, the central left, the progressive left, the green left. We have the loony left. We have those who are involved currently in the fight back within the established church against the sturdy, who are now called the church left. But if we can agree on the definition that the left is basically those who believe in the means of production, distributing and the exchange, fallen into the hands or been seized in the hands of the democratic forces in this island, that definition will be the definition that I'll speak about today. So I suppose from that point of view, none of us, including us on the platform, are the custodians of the left. The left is a broad church. It has, within the confines that I just outlined, it has broad ideas. It's different, of course, politically from the right, and ideologically from the right. And while the right remained divided, and sometimes as divided as the left, one common denominator of the right is that when push comes to shove, they come together, and they come together to fight an enemy, which is ourselves on the left. Lenin said, split, split, and split again, in search of the ideological purity. And only rarely in history have the forces of the left managed to stay together for long enough to strike a blow for the masses, soon after, to tear themselves apart. I am an Irish Republican, I am a socialist, I'm a political activist. I'm steeped in left-wing politics, steeped in it. My mother and father were founders, my father was one of the founders of the second wave. My grandfather was a founder of the Irish Transport and General Workers Union, currently been celebrated around the events of 1916 in the lead up to it. And my mother was a runner in the Tailor Makers Union. I've been in Sinn Féin when things were tight, and I've been an elected representative. When to be an elected representative meant you survived, and that's all you did, you survived. I've been in a party that's been marginalised when attempts by all the forces against us and ranged against us have been to silence us. I'm in Sinn Féin at the minute, a party that's recently in the European election took over 500,000 votes in the island of Ireland. Does that mean I know everything? Does it mean that I'm right? Does it mean that Sinn Féin's always right? Of course we're always right. But of course we're not. And of course we have no monopoly on what's right. And I don't come to lecture comrades in the left about how they've sold out, why they've sold out. I come to encourage the left to seek identity, to seek issues that are common, and to use those issues to push. I don't want to subdue the ideological discussion that was on the left, because it's obviously key. But let's not look, and let's not try and find what divides us before we find out what unites us. When we talk about the left, I don't refer, and I really don't make any apology for this, but I don't refer to the ideological revolutionaries who we meet in Kelly's cellars or in parts of Dublin or wherever we may find ourselves. I talk to those who don't speak the revolution, but who fight the revolution, whether they're in the community sector, the trade union sector, the political sector, and who follow the philosophy that talks cheap but doesn't buy drink. The left isn't a terminology that you wear like a badge. It's a job that you fight. It's a thing that you do. Nicola mentions the Assembly, and rightly so. Rightly so. Would the Assembly be different if it wasn't a coalition? Of course it would be different. Would Sinn Féin do things differently in the Assembly if it hadn't a coalition? Of course we would. But there isn't anyone with hand and heart who either doesn't read the papers, listen to the press, follow discussions like this. There isn't anyone that doesn't understand that it is Sinn Féin that is blocking the austerity bill. It is Sinn Féin that refused to support the treachery of the Stormont House Agreement. So let's not pretend that there is a Puritan section of the left and a working section of the left who somehow are more expedient. let's also not condemn others because they refuse to follow the jargon of the left that's allocated by the Express and by the Independent. Jargon that section of the media would dom us with in order to identify us as the loony left. While we continue to navel gaze, and while we continue to engage in the purest view of what the left should be, the neoliberals in our society move forward. They plot, they plan, they condemn the poor for their lot. They congratulate the rich for being the saviours of the poor and giving all of us jobs. How good they are. We are in a unique political position on the island of Ireland. I just want to deviate just briefly from the discussion, the immediate discussion, just to go back in terms of where the left finds themselves. Jeremy Corbyn was the guest of Fela last night, and he has had an opportunity of listening to a very measured submission, a very thought out submission. He's not a stranger to Irish politics. He's not a stranger to the city of Belfast. Would be hugely impressed by his contribution. I believe hugely reassured by his commitment to try and move that party, which he clearly loves, the British Labour Party, to a more progressive view. This morning he was the subject of vicious attack on both the local media and the British media and some sections of the media in the south of Ireland. And I have to say that many of those attacks were led by people who identified themselves as the left, thus entering the battle set for us by a media that's hostile to us. The austerity battle at the present is hugely significant. It is an opportunity for progressive forces to unite. Labour creates wealth. That's it. That's it. And if it creates wealth, it has a democratic right and a democratic credibility to decide where that wealth goes. If you set a shovel in the corner, it'll be a shovel in the corner. If you set a shovel in the corner and a worker using that shovel or a computer in the room, then that creates wealth. And those that create wealth and those that represent those who create wealth have the absolute right to decide how that wealth is spent. We have engaged, that is Sinn Féin, have engaged for quite a long time, and I see Paul Maskey in the back of the hall, the local MP. We have engaged for quite a long time with those sections of the trade union leadership who we sought to encourage to stand against the austerity measures. And while we have to pay particular attention to those within the trade union movement who have heroically stood up against these measures, unfortunately, that hasn't been the case with all. Some trade union leaders refused when we encouraged them to break the party that our opinion, shackles them to a policy that makes it more difficult to fight austerity. Many of them privately tell us to get on with the cuts, do the best you can. There is no alternative. You're on your own. Well, let me tell you, for the people in this room, Sinn Féin have no fear of being on our own. We have been on our own for many, 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 many times. And we've come through it. Sinn Féin is represented in every forum on these islands and further astray that the community, that our communities can elect people to. And even with that mandate, we don't have a monopoly on the absolute way forward. We seek to engage those on this island who more than say that they're opposed to the lot that's enforced upon the working class, north and south, but who do it by example. It would be wonderful, and it would be ideal, if the workers of the world would rise up tomorrow. I don't think that's likely to happen. We have to develop the power within our communities, within our cities. We have to structure the battles that we fight and the battles that we plan. We have to cease looking over our shoulders to blame each other on what is clearly the conspiracy against the working class. We have to seek international solidarity. And again, I want to make reference to a comment that was made recently by a member of the left when they were attacking Martin McGuinness for being in America for seeking support to bust the austerity measures that are being imposed upon our communities. Some people would describe themselves as colony socialists. Colony went to America, sought support, sought to harness the massive influence of the Irish American community. The same people were silent when Gerry Adams, under the threat of an American administration of losing his visa, decided that he would go to Cuba. Same voices were silent when Pat Dougherty, a Sinn Féin MP, is currently key to helping to produce a resolution of the American imposed crises around Cuba. We are judged by our contemporaries. We are judged by those that we associate with, both nationally and internationally, whether it's in the camps of the Gaza or whether it's in the streets of Greece. Our solidarity with those progressive forces in and outside of Ireland is the final testimony as to where we stand. I deliberately, and I'm glad I did, I deliberately refrained from entering into the battle that's allocated to us of the left blaming the left for what the capitalist system has imposed. And maybe we'll return to it, and maybe we'll return to it in the question and answers, but let me make this clear. And I started by saying nobody speaks, nobody has the monopoly on the title of the left, but we all have a responsibility. All of us who say that we are progressive, all of us who say that we are the forces who lead the working class and who defend working class interests, have a responsibility to spend more time doing that than attacking each other. So I welcome your question, Scotty Bielabella.
Thank you. And our final speaker from the panel is Ciarán Allen. Ciarán's a member of People Before Profit, and he joins us today all the way from Dublin. So welcome, Ciarán.
Okay, we're almost at the 100th anniversary of the 1916 rebellion, and we can say there's one particularly tragic policy that haunts this island, and it is the policy of austerity. Just look at the actual figures. In the south of Ireland, since the Troika arrived, 35,000 people in the public sector have been pushed out of their jobs, or rather pushed volunteers, whichever you want to put it, leaving the health service in chaos, the working class people going to school facing a much worse education. And in the north, we find that it's 20,000, almost the exact same proportions of the population, 20,000 people about to be pushed out of the public sector. According to the INTO, 3,000 teachers. According to UNISON, 1,500 care assistants in schools. This is austerity. There's no getting away from it. There's austerity operating on a 32-county basis on this island. Meanwhile, the rich, the wealthy, are doing very well. Belfast, I believe, has the highest number of multimillionaires outside of London. At Dublin, you'll be glad to know those of you who have a bit of money in your pocket. If you want to invest in commercial property, you'll get the highest rate of return in the world by investing in Dublin. The rich are doing extremely well while the mass of people are suffering poverty on this island. Now, in this situation, there are a number of common patterns. And just to get the issue of debate and unity out of the way, I'm completely for unity of the left. I've worked with Sinn Féin when it comes to H Block campaign, worked with Sinn Féin on the water charges, although we disagree on the question of the boycott and so on, but we work together when it comes to fighting against austerity. But that does not mean we should hide differences on exactly what's actually happening on this island. And I want to point to three patterns that exist right on both sides of the Irish border. The first pattern is what I call the reluctant austerity politician. If it was simply the case that it was the Tories or the Troika that were imposing austerity, it might be easier to fight back against it. But whether it's Ireland or Greece today, it's often the reluctant austerity politician who says, I don't want to do it, it would be far worse if I wasn't there, but basically I have to go along with austerity. And that policy, I would argue, applies to the Irish Labour Party, who initially, although it's often forgotten now, once talked left-wing. unfortunately applies to Mr. Tsipras in Greece today, who will now, despite, if you like, good policies, will be attacking pension reform, and I would argue, in terms of Stormont House Agreement, it will apply to Sinn Féin, the reluctant politician. Secondly, the other pattern we find is when they want to impose austerity on you, they don't tell you, "I'm here to rob you." They never do anything like that. They use very benign language. They talk about reform, rebalancing between the public and the private sector. They don't say, "I'm here to take it out of your pocket." Right? So you find this sort of language exactly in the Stormont House Agreement, as well as, for example, in the memorandums of understanding that were imposed on the South. And crucially, you also find the pattern, a very similar pattern on both sides of the border, that while politicians at a national level are involved in imposing austerity, often at a local level, depending on their own prick or school that's been closed or hospital ward, those same politicians will often be involved in, if you like, campaigns against the specifics of austerity, even while they actually impose it or support it from the top. So these patterns are problems in terms of the fight against austerity. Now, what I've been asked to do here is to talk about a credible left alternative policy to austerity. That's what I think we have to focus on. So let's look at what we mean by credible. Well, the first thing you've got to ask is, credible to who? Are we trying to devise a policy that will be credible to the wealthy who are already gaining? Or are we talking about a policy that's credible to working people that are suffering from austerity? So the policy I'm going to advocate is what I believe a perfectly credible policy, realistic policy, in terms of working people, even though it may annoy the hell out of those who currently have power. And secondly, when we talk about credibility, we can't avoid the elephant in the room, which is what's happened in Greece. Because what's happened in Greece can happen to any party. If you've had, for example, the most radical left party come to power in Greece and is now implementing vicious austerity, that's what's happening, under the orders of the EU, then if you're going to promote an a credible policy, you're going to have to answer the question, is the deed going to follow the talk, or is it just simply talk? Now, in terms of what I would argue is a credible policy against austerity, I just want to make four very simple and basic points, which I think are perfectly credible from a left and working class point of view. The first is that we have to make the wealthy pay for this crisis rather than working class people. And that means wealthy individuals and corporations. And I really want to come to the question of corporations. Ireland is being set up as a tax haven, a respectable tax haven on the edge of Europe. Most dramatically in the south, where a company like Apple pays about 3% of its profits in tax, a working class woman that gets up to clean their offices will pay about 20%. But these parasites will only pay 3%. And therefore we're setting up a situation where both the north and the south, with the talk of harmonising corporation tax, the aim is to build a 32-county tax haven, this country, as a tax haven. Now, I'm just going to put this as a question. I'm all for Stormont having the right to have tax powers, but we should have a clear statement from Sinn Féin, because I don't think there is clarity on this. Are you for increasing the corporation tax? I asked the same question in South. I said, are you for taking the money out of Apple, Google, and these people who are, if you like, trying to rob the poor of the world by using Ireland as a tax haven? Are you for taking money out of them rather than working class people? It's a simple question. So I think we should get a clear answer on that question. That's the first element of any strategy about austerity. You must be willing to raise tax on corporations. Secondly, we should be against privatisation. That seems to me to be utterly obvious in terms of any left-wing agenda. But I think that we have to understand that privatisation has moved on a bit from the days of Margaret Thatcher. And one of the main forms of privatisation these days is the private finance initiative or public-private partnerships. Let's take a simple example. The Royal Victoria Hospital. The car park here, as I understand it, is run by a private company who rakes in the profits from the charges, approximately half a million, will do so for a set period of time, and I'm amazed to hear the public sector put up some of the money for the actual car parking. Now, private finance initiative is where there are cutbacks It's often tempting, particularly for local councillors or local representatives, to say, listen, we can get money if we do a so-called partnership deal with a private company that will then get to rake in profits for 20 years and so on. I believe that the left should be absolutely clear that private finance initiatives and PPPs is something that we should oppose and defend the public sector. Thirdly, I think the left has to be to the fore in defending the public sector. We've had nonsense thrown at us for the last number of years that the public sector somehow is unproductive, uneconomic, the private sector is the dynamic sector of the economy. How do they think people get to work if there isn't a hospital service, or use the most basic technological machines if there's not a proper education service? We should reject the idea that the public sector is somehow a problem. And therefore, why are we buying into an agenda that talks about rebalancing in the north between the public and the private sector? We want more public sector investment precisely because private capitalism has not been willing to invest sufficiently in this area. And this is particularly important in an area like West Belfast, that one of the highest proportions of the workforce throughout the north works in the public sector. And therefore, the left should be to the fore in defending the public sector and not talking, as I have seen, for example, Labour Party trade union leaders in the south, about the need for voluntary redundancies. A voluntary redundancy is still a redundancy that leaves behind a lack of a teacher or a lack of a nurse or a job in itself. And therefore, we should be proud to defend the public sector and not fall into this trap. And lastly, for those of us particularly in the south, the left has to be clear that we are against paying off the banker's debt. Why should the people of Ireland, or people certainly of the south of Ireland, have to pay for the gambling debts of bankers? If I go into the bookie shop, put on a bet, I can't come back to the state and say, give me a recapitalisation, a handout, please. Okay, so why are we paying for the banker's debt? The left has to be clear that we have to be absolutely against paying off this debt because there's no prospect of reform in the south, because that debt is due to be paid, will continue to be paid until 2053. Now, is this a credible policy? I think it's credible to working class people. Is it credible to the elites of Europe and the world, indeed? And I would say, given the experience of Greece, we know now what their response would be to any such policy. And I would urge people here, have a look at what Varoufakis, the beans that Varoufakis has spilled in terms of his negotiations with the EU. You go to the EU, they make their case in a rational fashion, and he's told by the German minister, Schauble, elections don't change anything. Forget it. Do what you're told, and so on. And therefore, the first thing we have to do in terms of actually implementing a strategy against austerity is get some clarity on the question of the EU. Because I think Syriza made a big mistake. I think they thought that the EU were partners. They thought there's something called social Europe, that we can talk to these people, we can talk nicely to them, and they'll understand reason. The reality we now know is that the EU is an institution for economic terrorism. It's a straitjacket for neoliberalism. It's a mechanism that goes into play automatically to actually impose neoliberalism. And therefore, we have to be clear on the left. Are we somehow continually supporting the EU as some sort of progressive institution, or are we actually going to oppose that institution? And crucially, is the left willing to take unilateral action? This is the issue. Unilateral action to, for example, write down bankers' debt. Now, again, I think there's an ambiguity on this. Certainly, people for profit, we believe that a left government in Ireland must be willing, the south of Ireland in particular, must be willing to unilaterally write down a banker's debt. When I look at the Sinn Féin programme, I see it's exactly the same as Syriza. We will go and negotiate again. OK, that's fine. But what happens when they say, get lost, do what you're told? What's the next move? And therefore, the question of, are you for unilateral write down of debt is actually quite important. I think a left strategy that is purely a parliamentary strategy is doomed to defeat from the very start. It is impossible to take on the powers of the rich sitting behind a cabinet table and simply signing documents. What you need is the mobilisation of working class people. And I think, for example, the strike here in March, effectively against the Stormont House Agreement by the unions, was brilliant. We want to see more of that on an all-Ireland basis. We certainly, People for Profit, had hoped and urged at the Right to Water demonstration would have coincided with the demonstration, the one-day strike in the north, because we need to see across this island an anti-austerity resistance movement against the attacks on both sides of the border. And lastly, all of that means, this we come back to James Connolly, of course it means you're starting out with an anti-capitalist perspective. Not in some airy-fairy sense that maybe we're against capitalism, we'll never see the great day, but in reality, starting out with the fact we cannot tailor our policies to the needs of a system that is now dying, that is actually increasingly recession, if you like, ridden with recession, increasingly is built on speculation rather than productive investments. Any left agenda will have to envisage the possibility of moving beyond capitalism rather than simply trying to manage it. And that brings me back to the question of Connolly. I have to say, however, Connolly never got to be invited into the White House to give his bowl of shamrock to a US president. My understanding always, he went to the working class movement of America, and that was where his solidarity came from. But Connolly made a very, very simple point. He said, listen, he says, our demands most modest are, we only want the earth. I was absolutely right. The demands we're looking for are very modest. Make corporations pay the same amount as cleaning women or cleaning men, the tax they pay. Stop privatisation. These are very modest demands. But in today's world, after Greece, they're going to demand a challenge to capitalism, and that, it seems to me, is a crucial debate on the left today.
Thanks very much to the panel for their initial comments, where they certainly laid out their sort of stall as such. I'm going to chair the next sort of part. Yeah, there's people indicating already, which is fantastic to see. It's feel of summer school already. But listen, so we've a number of speakers that are keen. Hopefully we plan the time for everybody. We'll kick off with just one sort of question first, and then we'll bring it to the panel and we'll see how that develops. So let's chat them on at the front here.
Thank you. There are two parallel questions, really, go side by side. One question which people have already touched on, but I would like a further explanation, is would the panellists or their party reduce corporation tax in order to create employment? And the second one is, do the panellists see Sinn Féin as a left-wing party, or do they see them as something different?
If you
want to
kick off with Gemma then first, and then we'll work our way across.
Well, your first question, reduce corporation tax to create jobs, will that happen? You know, let's look at the basis of that. Very rarely have we seen that reducing corporation tax does create jobs. I don't think it's really worked very well down south, so are we going to have the same stimulus here? I doubt it. Again, what we're going to do is give more tax cuts to the big business. There's no guarantee that they're going to be put into any kind of investment in jobs, education, learning about growing the workforce. So I don't think that we would go along those lines. With the question of Sinn Féin, are they on the left or not? I think, again, two different questions. Are we talking about Northern Ireland or are we talking about the Republic? There's a parallel there. You know, in the South, they certainly do seem to have a left-wing or left-of-centre profile. In the North, not so much. Although I think maybe the response that they've got on the ground recently with their U-turn on the Stormont House Agreement has maybe brought them further back towards it, but certainly not as much as what I would think they should be.
Okay, Gemma, thank you. Joe?
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of Republicans are in the business of taking power back. I mean, the business of taking power back from the colonial authority, in this case the British. Now, we seek corporation tax because it should be ours to decide how we use it. Well, how will we use it is a matter for discussion. There's no decision, as you know. What we do is accept that we will take the ownership of. Is Sinn Féin a left-wing party? Well, I think it's for others to decide, okay? But clearly, Sinn Féin, in my opinion, is a left-wing party. I don't believe you can be an Irish Republican in that sense without being on the left or off the left. I think that in terms of where we stand, it isn't judged by the terminology, Fran. It's judged by the action. And if you look at our what we're in confrontation with in terms of either, and the Stormont House Agreement has been mentioned several times. We blocked the Stormont House Agreement. Let's remind everybody that's what happened. It didn't fall apart because others decided that it wasn't. We blocked it. Sinn Féin blocked it. We stood against it. We're blocking the austerity in Stormont at the moment. Stormont is a conglomeration of other parties. And I made the point when I spoke, would it be different if we hadn't that coalition? I suspect that it would. In terms of Belfast, as we're the city that we're in, look at the record of Sinn Féin councillors in Belfast. And then ask the question, is the programme that Sinn Féin is rolling out in Belfast, was supported by others on occasions, is it a progressive, is it a left wing, is it a socialist programme? Well, I would argue that it is. Mick makes the point that...
Gemma.
It's okay. That's actually twice, I beg your pardon. Just to remind people that Sinn Féin has come out of a very successful election campaign. To suggest, for whatever reason, that we have changed as a result of some electoral hiccup, is obviously not the case. The case is that, I know you were a candidate, as were you, mm-hmm. and my understanding of it just didn't get elected, but Sinn Féin did. Okay, so let's just get that into the priority where it is.
Actually, it was Nigel Dodds got elected.
No, but there's been more than one election. There's been more than one election that you have fought recently, isn't that right?
Yes.
So you stood as a candidate recently in more than one election, okay. But you still didn't get elected. That's the point that I'm making. Nigel Dodds, to my knowledge, didn't stand in the council election. The point that I'm making, and I'm doing it in response to Gemma's point, that there is no U-turn in Sinn Féin as a result of an election shock. Sinn Féin is one political party. It has a common policy north and south. It's there to be seen. I don't think anybody who is a student of politics subscribes to the DUP view of a Southern Command and Sinn Féin politics and a Northern Command, unless you choose to have a look at that. We're an All-Ireland party. We're proud of our All-Ireland dimension, and that's what we do. Now,
okay.
Let's hope that's the answer.
Come on, thanks. And Kieran, just briefly, and I want to get some more.
Okay, would we reduce corporation tax to create jobs? Simple answer, no. Secondly, it doesn't create jobs, right? A very simple point is that look at the South. The corporation tax is 12.5%. The reality is it's 6%. If the corporations pay 6%, who gets to fund the hospitals, the schools and so on? It's working class people. And therefore taxes on working class people tend to be higher. If you earn, for example, 35,000 in the South, you'll pay a tax rate of 41%. It means you've got less money in your pocket, less money to spend and less jobs are created. It's all this mythology that reducing the corporation tax creates jobs is completely wrong. Only 7% of jobs in the South come from foreign multinationals who benefit from the corporation tax. Now, note, we haven't had a clear answer from Sinn Féin on this question. Like, I'm for the right. You're right. I'm for the right to reduce to have the power to move the corporation tax up or down. But I still think by the end of this debate we should get an answer. Are you for moving it up? Or are you for moving it down? It's simple, right? We are absolutely clear in the South. We want to take more off these people, so we take less off working class people. If you don't want to pay for water charges, you make them pay. It's simple. On the question, is Sinn Féin a left policy? I believe that many... I think, first of all, Sinn Féin uses left-wing policies in the South. There's no doubt about that. And that's why, in many ways, it's risen in the polls in the South. I think it's still a contradictory party, because I think, on one hand, it's not clear about the corporation tax, which almost every other left-wing party, including people like Jeremy Corbyn, I believe, is far increasing. I don't know why a left-wing party wouldn't come out for that. But broadly speaking, I think the supporters of Sinn Féin are coming from the left, but they come from a different tradition on the left, to, for example, the tradition of people for profit, which is one of emphasising more working class action from below rather than simply change from above.
Okay, thanks, Kieran. There's a girl at the front, a guy at the back, and there's a guy in the middle here, and another girl. So we'll take yourself first there. Yeah.
So I just want to go on what Joe was saying there, kind of talking about how much would the panel agree, really, that March 13th was actually, you were saying it wasn't the elections, how much was actually March 13th, biggest strike here in the North in many years, the real factor in Sinn Féin doing a U-turn on welfare reform, and also a big change in language in terms of certain Stormont House Agreement. I think from what Kieran was saying, people for profit talk quite clearly about people power, people on the streets, that they really bring about change. Streets have shown that kind of behind the scenes dealings only get you so far, and eventually end in defeat. And just to kind of, I don't know, to put it quite clearly, I guess with the panel agree, especially in order to unite us as opposed to divide us, that the real solution then would be get out on the streets, strike, get the people out, as opposed to being behind the scenes. And that means not implementing the Stormont House Agreement, and that means to be absolutely vocal and absolutely clear, and to not implement savage cuts, which would do much more to divide us than unite us.
Joe, that same to you, so I'm going to ask you to respond quickly, then I'm going to respond.
Well, I mean, you know, I know you've got a working knowledge of politics, so you know Sinn Féin, and you know what Sinn Féin in terms of its ability to change situations that it finds itself in. We support workers' rights to strike. We support strikes that have happened. We support strikes that are anti-austerity strikes. We took part in them. We provided a speaker for them. We've done all those things. And we didn't have a situation where Sinn Féin somehow was resisting that. We were encouraging it. And we have done from the beginning of the austerity battle. We've been encouraging unions to stand up, to be counted, to do all of that. In terms of the Stormont House Agreement, we didn't do a U-turn in the Stormont House Agreement. We didn't do a U-turn. We signed up to an agreement that was then violated and broke by the DUP, supported by other political parties. When that became the case, we refused to endorse what they tried to change and we already agreed. I don't think anybody, this is not about, from my point of view at least, this is not about scoring points. I don't think there's anybody that thinks that Sinn Féin is ambiguous around the austerity battle. I don't think anybody doesn't understand that when you say no on the floor of the Assembly, we will not sign this bill, that it means we will not sign this bill. I don't think anybody who's faced with the media barrage that's been directed against Sinn Féin in the last number of months and the threat to bring down the Assembly, all in an attempt to intimidate Sinn Féin into signing an agreement that clearly we won't sign, doesn't know where Sinn Féin's position is. Now, to answer your question, does the left need to do more? Do we all need to do more? Should there be more strikes? Should there be more protests? Should there be community resistance to all of this? The answer is yes. Of course it's yes. Now, I mean, these are methods that Sinn Féin have employed successfully over this and other issues for many, many, many years.
Yeah, Joe, thank you. I'm going to take the next two speakers. Yep, I've got this all, so I know where I'm coming around. There's a girl here.
Right.
Thank you. And then I'm going to come to Carl. So yourself and then Carl, and then we'll hear from the panel. So,
I'm a big fan. I felt the second afterwards. My question's for Joe as well. First of all, it's not about scoring points. Just to come back on what you did, what the point was, and pointed out how Rafa and Gemma did in North Belfast, where they definitely started from a lower base point than Sinn Féin did, and the case with propaganda from the DUP and Sinn Féin that there are anti-austerity measures or they're fighting anti-austerity wouldn't work. Anyway, the point is that you call for unison among the left and you say that it's the only way that we can move forward, but how do you expect other parties or individuals on the left to come together with Sinn Féin when you say you're not going to sign up the Stormont House Agreement, but you did provisionally and it hasn't completely broken, and as a part of that, regardless of welfare reform, you've agreed to, for example, cut 1,500 jobs for special needs assistance and then claim to represent the poorest or the least vulnerable in society. The most vulnerable in society. How can you then credibly claim to be anti-austerity, anti-Stormont House Agreement, and call for the left to unite with you?
Do you want me to, or is somebody else going to speak
here? I'm going to take another question here. Okay.
And then can I come back to that?
You can, of course you can, yeah.
Questions for
Rob,
Kieran.
Nicola.
Nicola.
Rob.
Go ahead, Carl.
I started that as well. See, Sinn Féin, blame him on everything.
Go ahead, Carl.
It's an observation for as much as a question. It's probably two questions anyway. The first question, as you said, there are the people, Sinn Féin supporters or activists, come from a different left-wing background than maybe activists of people with more profit. So I'd like you to sort of elaborate on that. Also as well, I think a lot of this discussion, and I missed a good part of it, is simply about how we finance the state or how we finance the country. I didn't hear anybody talk about, I didn't hear Joe's, I only heard the end of the people with more profit one, about the 32 county aspect of it, is that a feasible alternative that we should have a 32 county economy instead of having two states travelling through health services or whatever else. Also as well, he's talked about James Connolly. If he was going to America in 1914 or 1915 to meet President Wilson, I think it was the time that he went to America, and he wouldn't have met President Wilson. I think James Connolly would have been very foolish then, because what he would need to do is go and make his point and lobby what was going on back home. I think he would have. So I think he also might have brought a bowl of shamrocks with him. Also as well, I think it's the interpretation of left-wing politics. I think everybody has a different interpretation of it. Every country that's run by a left-wing government doesn't run it the exact same way. I come from West Belfast. I grew up in Turf Lodge. We were, like any other area in West Belfast, a very much a working class, day-by-day battle to put food on the table, and that's what my parents did. Was that left-wing politics? Of course it was, because it was about helping your neighbour. Sinn Féin, for the last 30 years, in my opinion, when they came into politics in terms of standing against in elections, have very much had an ethos of left-wing politics in all them working class estates. We are still a party that you can walk in the any estate every single day in West Belfast and ask for help, where it's on finance, where it's on housing. There's not many other parties on the platform, and I know the Workers' Party, we probably learned a lot of from the Workers' Party in the early 70s and stuff, because they obviously developed them constituency type surgeries, and we're doing that now. So left-wing politics to me, everybody in the room may differ, the left-wing politics to me is about providing the service for the working class and making sure the working class get an equal share of what the country's providing.
Okay, Carl, thanks. Kieran, I'm going to invite you to come back, and then Joe, I'll let you respond as well. And then we'll take
Okay, well, look, just on your last point. Look, there's a clear difference between the Republican movement, for example, in the 1950s, where you think of figures like Sean Souths, often based in rural Ireland, have very strong adherence to the church and sometimes pretty much far to the right in terms of his politics, and the working class base of Sinn Féin in both the north and the south today. So we're not arguing about that, right? But what we're talking about is, first of all, the nature of the left, and the question of what's up in United Ireland, are your two questions, right? So first of all, isn't all Ireland...
Sorry. Also, just to explain, I know you're saying where it comes from, that background, but I'm even talking about you, because you should say a Sinn Féin supporter or a Sinn Féin activist comes from a different sort of background than maybe a people before profit. I'm only 33, believe it or not, most people probably should be 21. But so for me, yeah, I come then from a different background than you, maybe.
Right, well, I'm not talking about you or me, I'm talking about generally the different traditions of the different organisation. I'm not personalising it, okay, but just to be clear on different traditions, right? So I would say there are different traditions on the left, obviously, and that's why we have debates and so on. The tradition that we come from is one that sees change primarily coming from the mobilisation of working class people. That's just a formula. Maybe just give it to you in specifics. We in the South face the question of water charges. They want to make us pay for water and so on. It is our belief that the primary way of defeating that charge would be when working class communities stand together and defy the state and refuse to pay. We have therefore advocated very clearly a boycott. We have gone into working class areas and said, boycott the charges, stand together, this is the way to win. The initial Sinn Féin position was, first of all, to give back the forms, to cooperate with Irish Water, and then to say, change will come when we get into government in the South. So there's a difference of approach. Now, I would call the approach we have is building primarily from below, true working class activity, and I'm glad to say at this point in the South, 57% of people have refused to pay, and it's that which is going to destroy the water charges primarily, rather than simply a government minister. That's not to say I'm against having a government minister. We'd like to see left-wing government ministers, but the motor for change has to come from below in terms of people power. Secondly, on the question of United Ireland, yes, we are for a 32-county Ireland, absolutely. We have two failed states economically in Ireland. Both of them are failed states. Look at the level of emigration from the south. But a 32-county economy, you have to be clear on this in Sinn Féin, is it to be based on harmonising the existing arrangements? This is why the question of corporation tax is important, right? Are you far right? We're going to get a 32-county Ireland because we bring our corporation tax rate in line with the south. That's one way of going about it, trying to bring about a capitalist United Ireland, which I believe, in terms of economy, will not lead to any significant difference for working class people. It may lead to other differences, but in terms of economic changes, working class people won't make a change. Or do you start on the basis, to go back to our friend James Connolly, that the only way to bring about a united Ireland is to fight for a workers' republic where all sections of the working class gain by specifically taking over, putting industry into public ownership, by actually fighting to make the wealthy pay. That's a very different approach to a united Ireland. So to put it simply, there are two different variations, not just one version of an all-Ireland economy. There are two, and I would argue for the latter approach rather than the former.
Okay, Joe, I'm going to let you respond, and then I'm going to take maybe a few more questions.
I just want to respond to the point that you made in terms of the savage cuts that have been imposed right across. They're imposed not because Sinn Féin has decided that people need to be punished. There's 1.5 billion taken out of the budget. Sinn Féin have encouraged, first of all, Sinn Féin themselves have stood against that, and they've encouraged those who are the partners in a coalition to do exactly the same thing. It is a coalition, and I made the point a couple of times, and I'll make it again. If it was a singular Sinn Féin government, would it be different? Of course it would. But political struggle is based on the reality of where you may find yourself. So that's that aspect of it. And I answered the question about strikes. Just to go back to the point that you made about Fra. Fra tweeted last week, "Congratulations, Sinn Féin, for standing up against austerity." And he's my friend. I responded to the allegation that Sinn Féin had changed because of an election shock that Gemma had made. And I was trying to give you to demonstrate that that's not the case. I have long listened to the argument. And to some extent, we're hearing the same argument here, you see, you know, that there's a Sinn Féin in the south and a Sinn Féin in the north, and they may be cousins, but they're not brothers and sisters. This is a DUP argument. This is an argument that allows the DUP off the hook every time the DUP are cornered.
Through the chair, but
it's not the reality. Now, that was the point that I was making. That was the only point that I was making in terms of demonstrating that there was no hiccup or panic or fear over an election result. And just for the record, and you mentioned Nigel Dawes, Sinn Féin increased their vote in North Belfast, just for the record.
Okay.
Sorry, can I just clarify something?
I
don't think that Sinn Féin have changed their tactics on election results. That wasn't the point that I was trying to make. It was very much a feeling that I certainly got on the doorsteps talking to people. And I think it's the feeling within, you know, different areas that we went into, more feedback rather than actual hard election results. Because we know they got elected, you know, that's black and white. There's no argument there, so we know that that's not the case. But it's certainly on the ground, talking to people, I did feel as if there was something different. And maybe that has now transpired into a slight change.